welcome to the Uplifting Content Podcast. I'm your host and the founder of Uplifting Content, Ione Butler. And in each episode, I'll be speaking to a special guest about a topic that we hope will inspire and uplift you. Enjoy the show. Today, I am speaking with Max Stossel. I first discovered him through some of his videos, and I'm excited to talk to him today because of the work that he's doing. We're going to talk about humane technology and the time well spent movement. I love connecting with you all. I love having this Facebook platform, but at the same time, I hate it and I don't want to have you stuck in your laptop. So I'm going to be speaking to him about all sorts of things like that. So Max, first of all, thank you. How are you today?
I'm well. Thanks so much for having me. It's good to be here.
My pleasure. Would you start by telling us a bit about you and what you do and what you love, or just whatever you feel like sharing with everyone?
Sure. So my name is Max Stossel. I'm actually a poet and filmmaker, but I am also the head of content and storytelling for the Center for Humane Technology, which is an organization that is dedicated to sort of reversing what we call the digital attention crisis, which is the state of affairs of the current internet, and aligning technology with humanity's best interests. And I think as many of us can relate to, while the internet and technology have given us obviously tons of value and there's lots of positives, we haven't really to this point been so honest about the costs, the societal costs that also come into play, both to ourselves as individuals and also to ourselves as a group and as a whole. And so we're working on sort of just creating more awareness about what is going on in this somewhat invisible system that governs our digital world. And also trying to really change it so that it can put people at the center of the equation. Because when we're on most of these social networks, we're, you know, you don't pay for Facebook. I don't pay for Facebook. Coca-Cola pays for Facebook. It's really advertisers are who Facebook is beholden to. And even when they're trying to do the right thing and, you know, and they recently announced wanting to have people spend less time on the platform because they know that's better for people's health. But even still, there's always going to be this tension of they need to get more time from us this year than they got last year to keep their shareholders happy. Right. And so when we're not the customer, we're the product, we are being sold, we are being traded. And these algorithms, these companies are so good at, you know, playing chess against your brain to serve you the exact right piece of content that is the best thing to keep you scrolling. And, you know, addiction is what we feel as a symptom. But really it's what's far scarier to me is the way that those things work. So just like the most basic sort of human instincts are what tend to rise to the top, the scary things, the outrageous things, and the things that we already believe. It's like, what pieces of content are the ones that we fill our brains with that end up being effective at holding us there? It's not things that we'll later be satisfied with. It's right. The bottom of the totem pole. Long-winded answer, but
that's no, it's good. So how did... And so what's the difference between and then the time well spent? Is it like the same organization or is it two separate things? I mean, it seems to be working in alignment with each other, right? Or is it two kind of separate projects?
So Tristan coined the term time well, Tristan Harris, who was really the leader of this movement, coined the term time well spent a few years ago. And things sort of started out as time well spent, but the Center for Humane Technology is a larger organization that Time Well Spent lives under. Time Well Spent is the sort of people's movement to demand better technology. The Center for Humane Technology, for the Humane Technology, sort of, it lives with under that, but they're also working on some larger issues, inspiring tech companies to show them exactly how the world could look if we had better design, doing some education of governments, and letting them know what's going on here and trying to think of what some really focused, smart regulations might be, and working with employees just like, and research. There's just more that the Center for Humane Technology does. Time well spent is really the people's movement that lives with under it.
I like it a lot. Now, how did you come into to doing this? Like, and your work, like how did your journey come here?
Sure. When social media first became a thing, I was lucky. I was in college at the time and I was getting a job and they were like, hey, you're young. This is a healthcare startup. Go figure out how to do social media. And I was like, okay. And they were having a lot of trouble making sales. And all of a sudden I was gathering a whole lot of leads on Facebook and Twitter. And they were very interested of, okay, how are you doing this? And I was like, wow, this is something I can be good at without having to study for. Awesome. And I went on to do social strategy for Budweiser for a little while. And I essentially like our whole job was figuring out what works in the Facebook algorithm. And I learned that two things really work. One was extreme statements. Budweiser is the greatest beer, the king of beer. Whether that gets positive or negative comments, both were good for reach, and so that's good for us. And then also putting ideas in front of people they already believed. These are people who like to have a drink, show them a drink, and that works. And who really cares what Budweiser is doing on Facebook? It doesn't have much impact on the world. But I started to notice that news organizations were behaving the exact same way and altering the literal stories that they told based on what works in the Facebook algorithm. And you know, extreme statements and showing people things they already believe. And all of us, to an extent, the stories that we choose to tell, the way we choose to present ourselves on Facebook is very much dictated by these algorithms, by this sort of popularity contest and reach contest to see what works. And that has a very significant, you know, they bump their elbow in the office and affect 2 billion people. That is a really, it's unprecedented. How these little changes can have such a grave impact on society. And so I did that for a while. That was my first sort of awakening to the importance of this. And then I fell in love with startup world, and I had a friend launching a social media startup. I thought, okay, I can help with that. And I was trying to do some of the things that we condemn with time well spent. Was I was designing notifications to figure out how do we best steal your time. What's the exact language we should use? Which of your friends should we show like this picture? What should come first? What should come second? Once you're in the experience, we can autoplay videos, and that way you'll spend 10% more time within our experience. And at the time, I wasn't thinking I was doing anything wrong. I'm not making you do anything. But I really, it was conversations with Tristan that just sort of like elucidated this feeling in me of that there's something was up here, and there's a difference between what we'll do, what like behaviors our human bodysuit animal thing will do when you put certain inputs in front of us versus what we're satisfied with and what we'll look back on with happiness.
So you were doing that, and it's interesting because I find myself kind of stuck in this whole confusing place of wanting to make an impact, like wanting to bring people together, wanting to champion people's work, inspire, uplift, do all these things using a medium, social media, that I kind of don't really like.
I lost you after uplift. Can you say that again?
Yeah, sure.
Just internet connection, not in terms of what you said.
Yeah, no worries. Wanting to create content that uplifts people, bring people together, create this community, but then it's on a platform that I don't like, right? And so it's for me, I'm constantly torn between, and I don't even like being on social media. I don't like it, and yet it's my business, right? And so I would love to get your thoughts on what do you think is an effective way to bring people together. My whole objective with uplifting content is providing content that boosts people, makes you feel inspired, motivated to go out and do things, to connect with other people, to help, to take action, to do something, right? So what do you think would be a better way of doing that?
So it's a really hard question, right? Because it's we are beholden to the system, and it is such a powerful way of reaching audiences because we're on it so much of the time. But I think what you're hinting at is that while we're on it, we don't feel good. And it's nice to have some sort of oasis of positive content, but maybe I would invite you to just really be thinking about how can you be empowering off screen connection? How can you be really empowering beyond this is an example of somebody doing it and you're inspired. And it's hard because the environment is not designed for this. Facebook doesn't want people to stop being on Facebook. How can we, and really this is, I struggle with myself. I share my videos on social media too. And it's the way that I reach people. And I have to convince myself that I'm being so careful with everybody's time, that I'm taking such care with this content that I believe this is going to be worthwhile for them. And they'll be glad that they watched it, even if it means they're in this system. And there's some hypocrisy in that. And I'm well aware of it. A lot of this change has to come from the systemic side, because ultimately there would be times in our life, right? Where, okay, I've had a long day. I want to zone out. I want to watch just an hour of something. And then what if everything within Facebook were competing to be the most fulfilling hour of that content? So then uplifting content would be right there. And people would rate this as oh, when I watch this sort of stuff, I feel good. Mm-hmm. And so that would rise to the top within an algorithm like that. But for that zone of our life, right? No one wakes up in the morning and it's how much time can I spend behind a screen today? Mm-hmm. Like that's not what our human goal is. So we need that sort of systemic guidance. So it's like, okay, what do we want? And this is not necessarily the right answer, but a different way of thinking about it. Like, mm-hmm. what do we want out of our mornings? What do we want out of our focused and work productive time? What do we want out of love and relationships? What do we want out of our friendships? What do we want out of health and wellness and exercise? Like, what do we want out of learning? What are the zones of our lives that we care about? And then how can something like a Facebook help deliver us a menu of options that is really empowering in those zones and make us feel good about our lives versus the entire game being about ad revenue and scroll, scroll, scroll.
I like that a lot. And a really beautiful point. And what you said, I don't think it makes you a hypocrite. It's not like you're constantly out there spamming people's feed with stuff, you know? And that's something that with the recent changes to Facebook, we would post a lot of stuff on the page because the idea was the more we post, the more people we reach. Which again, I didn't like the idea of, because in my opinion, it's like, I don't want you to start staring at a Facebook feed all day. I don't even see all the posts that go out. And so I think then it's a really great point about making sure that if I'm taking 5 minutes of somebody's time, those 5 minutes are incredibly valuable. Like what I'm delivering is going to be of such high value that I am okay with taking those 5 minutes of their time. So
totally. And I think to be really a harsh self-critic in that way, because it's very easy for us to think like, well, what I'm doing is great and it matters and it's important and they're going to like it. Versus like really thinking from this perspective of like, is this really a better use of their time than going outside? Is this like really being critical with ourselves? I mean, to be honest, I think if you start thinking that way, we start sharing a lot less.
Like, yeah.
Is really the truth. And I don't know, you're in a tough position, the content industry, like always really, I empathize, is a really tough position to be in, especially when you're genuinely trying to do good and trying to uplift people. But I truly do believe that the more thoughtful that we are about why we're posting and is this really a positive thing for the people who are seeing it. I mean, anyway, I've personally found that it makes me post a lot less.
Yeah, that makes sense. Talking about thoughtful, amazing content, your stuff is stunning. And actually, I was just, oh my God, I don't watch the television, I don't have it. I was just at an appointment and they were playing Dr. Phil or something, and they were interviewing the family who had taken in the kid who recently went and shot people in Florida. And you have a video about promoting these shooters and people that do these things and you know, making them famous for it. And I was sat there and I was just listening to it and it was just so disgusting. And Dr. Phil was there going about, you know, we really need to make a change. We need to come together and do something as a society, as Americans, to stop this happening. And then he said nothing about what to do. And then just kind of went into this dialogue about, so this is what the kid said. This was his last message to the thing. And I was just like, oh, I'm so mad. I wanted to send in your video at that moment. So your stuff.
I appreciate you empathizing and feeling that. I feel the same way.
Yeah, and it's sad because you say in that, and I'll put a link to it in the comments of some of Max's videos. They're incredible. You were saying just, you know, waiting for the next one to come so that you can post it, and then that you know that is inevitably what is going on.
Actually, as we were creating that video, it was like there were two. We weren't ready by the next shooting. We didn't have the video. We were like, okay, we're going to do this.
Yeah,
we'll post
it
the next
horrific.
One. And it was really just awful in that way. And yeah, we worked with a couple of digital media organizations to come up with a set of guidelines as a way to responsibly cover events like that. Like included some things like leaving the shooter's name and face out of the thumbnail of articles. Cause right. So much of it is, and the reason, so this video takes place in a Facebook feed. It's a vertical video as sort of commentary on how we're consuming a lot of this information. And so much of it is just like, we just see this thing everywhere and don't really dive into it, but it starts to take over our minds. And I think in this sort of, you know, and this is not as much database as I normally like to be. This is more of a feeling, but like, I think in this world where so much of it is about, ooh, how many likes did I get? How much attention am I getting on these platforms, especially for kids? Like, and then you see like in a twisted way, this kid who might be thinking about taking his own life, like has a way of either doing that and going out with a whimper or like, oh, if I do this horrifying thing, then I get all of this attention. Mm-hmm. And attention is the commodity that is so precious. And it's obviously a horrible, horrible, horrible way of thinking and measuring like how you want to exist in the world. But I think, you know, these concepts are related because if we really had a system that valued value, making our lives better, then these wouldn't be the type of things that rose to the top of our feeds, right? How many people died of whether it's gun deaths or car accidents or disease, like today, like more than in that shooting, but right? But the shooting is scary. The shooting is attention grabbing. The shooting rises to the top and we want to fetishize and learn everything we could about this killer as though like we really are going to prevent or change anything that happens in our own lives because of it. Like it's just fills our body with this sort of fear and outrage without anything actionable, anything tangible to do. What if we empowered more that we could actually have control over?
And that's kind of my purpose and my mission is like, I'm not with uplifting content. It's not about ignoring things that are happening, putting your head in the sand and not talking about things. It's the way in which we talk about things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I was sat there disgusted by the conversation that they were having about, you know, this boy and blah, blah, blah. What do you say? Like, what do you do? Like, why do news outlets not suggest things to do? I mean, it just makes me so angry.
I mean, I actually thought I was like, oh, this is so obvious. So when I looked into it, there was clear research showing that the way we cover these events creates more events. Nobody wants more shootings. When you say the word gun control in America, you've immediately divided the country. But like, we can all agree that like, obviously we don't want more of these. And so like, so media coverage feels like a quick, easy thing that we could all address. Everyone will agree. This will be easy. Great. And you know, some of them were empathetic, but everyone is caught in this system where it really works. If they don't cover it, then someone else does cover it. And people will sort of like, you know, it feeds this sense of sort of like, what is this? This disgusting sort of curiosity that we all naturally have like for events like this. And so it's just, you know, it's a way of keeping the clicks afloat. And so it's very tough to stop that machine. And, you know, I think we would both agree that we need a sort of shift in consciousness.
Just
in the way we're looking at a lot of this world. And it's very tough to do that in the system that exists.
Yeah, I also think we as people have to start taking responsibility, because if, you know, obviously the stuff that you're doing is working with media outlets and tech companies and things like that to help people, you know, be conscious about what they're doing. But then us as consumers, I stopped watching the news for that very reason, especially after moving to America. It's pathetic, the news in this country. Like, I cannot believe. And I mean, I think it was after like 4 months of living here, I couldn't bear it. And so I stopped watching it. And, you know, anything that is of importance comes to me very quickly. I don't need to be watching it before I go to bed. And every time when I wake up in the morning, I get the information. It's kind of taking that choice and stop kind of feeding into it and sharing it and doing all that stuff. So,
yeah, So news was initially created, right? Because there was a scarcity of information and an abundance of attention. Everybody had a lot of time, didn't know what was going on. We now, in the internet world, we live in a time where there is a scarcity of information. An abundance of information and a scarcity of attention. So ultimately what news should be is a filter for us about what really matters and what's really important. But it's not. It's catering to this sort of this lowest instinct. And I am very rarely actually looking in and checking in at the news. And I actually don't think I'm less informed. Like, right. I think checking the news every day does not anymore make us more informed. It makes us more confused and angry because, you know, like, of course something is not happening all the time that really matters so much. Like, it's just, the system is not designed in a way that allows us to take a healthy step back and not feel like we're missing everything.
Right. Right. I'm very excited to hear about your new video. So you're currently in Australia shooting another video about psychedelics. Can you tell us about it?
It's going to be called, I think, could change by the end, but I think it'll be called Hallucinate Responsibly. So when I first tried psychedelics, obviously in a place where it was legal.
Don't incriminate yourself now.
I essentially was just, like, I was in awe. I was like, how could I have not understood how this beautiful perspective was waiting from here this whole time? And I was looking so down on these drugs and how could I have possibly, you know, been so close-minded? And it made me more open and more creative. And it was just like such a beautiful transformation. And then I was like, why don't I do this all the time? And spent them probably over the next 6 months, probably did them about like 6 or 7 more times, which is way too much. And I started to realize it's like it almost feels like it's a change to our operating system. And it's very hard to look back at ourselves after we've had that change and understand why we would miss or feel regret about anything that we've lost in that transition. Because it all just feels like, I've seen the light now. How would I, why would I want to live without seeing the light? But it was also a realization that, wow, the version of me who hadn't yet sort of exposed myself to this, he would look at me now and really think like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing with your life? What are you taking drugs in a desert? Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And so this poem is a conversation between an older version of myself and me now, sort of arguing about what this is doing to our life and to our mind and to our perspective. And I think it's, mm-hmm. it's interesting because, I mean, to me, like both, like one of them is not right. Like they both are very like, they both have their perspective, and it's just sort of, it highlights that, you know, what this stuff does to us is it changes us. And to me, I think everybody should at least once try hallucinogens. I think it's an incredibly powerful mind-opening experience. But I think we come from sort of similar communities where often this stuff is used very excessively and very recreationally, and people don't exactly take seriously what this is doing to our perspective and whether that's something we would really want if we could take a step back from it.
Yeah.
And so I'm proud that when I perform this poem, often people who haven't done hallucinogens come up to me and they're like, wow, I want to try that. And people who have done them a lot are like, okay, I think I hear you. I think maybe I should.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And so the video team here is in Australia. And so I figured I would come out and join them for the month while we work on it. I hope to release it in April, but dates with these things are never reliable.
Very cool. I can't wait to see it. Yeah. Are you going to Burning Man this year? Have you been to Burning Man before? Is that what you refer to? The desert?
Well, no, that would be illegal, but I have, I have been to Burning Man. Nice. And yes, I think I will be going this year. The theme is iRobot, which is technology and humanity. So I was
interesting.
Doing an art installation.
That would be incredible.
Which would be the first time for me, but I do want to do that. I hope I can find the time to do that.
Are you part of a camp out there?
Mosaic is usually who I go with. They were on 4A last year. Do you go as well?
Yes, I'll be part of Crossroads. I don't know that we've got our placement yet.
That was last year's placement. I don't know where we're at.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. For anyone that doesn't know, Burning Man is an incredible experience in the desert, unlike anything else in the desert in Nevada. And for me, what I love most about it is it's humanity at its kindest. And it's kind of what life can be like when everybody kind of is working with each other and to serve each other and to give. That's kind of one of my highlights of it.
It's cool. It's a special experience. Definitely highly recommend that one as well.
Yeah. And so with psychedelics, have you experienced ayahuasca?
So actually part of the piece is about like the newer version of me being like, ooh, I want to try ayahuasca. And the older version of me being like, slow down, dude. But so I have not yet tried it. I do think it's something that I will try at some point. I'm not exactly sure when that is.
Somewhere legal.
I needed to take a long break from hallucinogens.
Was that a recent thing that you were kind of taking them like at night? Was that a recent thing?
When I got exposed to this about 4 years ago, 3-4 years ago, and then and then it took about 2-3 years off.
Got it.
After that sort of dive too deep into the rabbit hole.
I mean, yeah, like, because I really love, and I cannot wait to see this piece because of that. Like, I love the idea. I always say to everybody, like, please experience ayahuasca, but, you know, do it. It's just so important. I mean, it doesn't even need to be ayahuasca, but it's so important where you do it, who you're doing it with, type of experience. It isn't a joke. Like, it can be an incredibly profound thing, and it can be an incredibly traumatic, awful thing. I do think it just a lot of people need help connecting to existence and source and life. Like, we're so in this kind of mind world where we're just all these outside, all the crap of humanity. Like, I just want more people to connect to what's important. So it's good in that respect, but then be careful.
No, for sure. And it's and you know, for me, like, I'm thinking about who's watching this, because it always, the like people who have never done this before, like, it's very hard to articulate to someone who has never had any sort of hallucinogenic experience what the hell we're talking about, right? Like it's really, really challenging to put that into words. And to me, it's just like one of the only ways that you can truly step outside of, right? Like we live our lives, we have our own experiences, we have our own emotions, and that builds. We build these neural pathways in our brains for however many years that we're alive. And that's the perspective we're looking through. And I've never seen, or I don't know of anything else other than like 80 years of meditation and things like that. And actually I've heard like Vipassana maybe is a similar experience, but haven't done that personally, which is 10 days of silence. But something that so profoundly takes you out of your own experience and lets you just see the world from a different point of view. And that is, you know, like it sort of reminds me of the This Is Water story of where like the two young fish swimming along, pass an older fish. The older fish says, "Good morning, boys, how's the water?" They swim along for a while. One turns to the other and says, "What the hell is water?" And like, you don't realize what's sort of happening around you when you're stuck in your own perspective. And hallucinogens are an incredibly powerful tool that can help us see the water that we're swimming in.
Agreed. One last thing.
But then there's the other side of it.
Yeah.
Doing them so much is more complicated and harder to understand, but it exists. Wait for the video and I'll show you.
Yeah. Bring it on. So one last thing, you've got so much going on. How do you do it? Like, how do you manage your time? Do you ever feel a bit overwhelmed? Do you ever get a bit stuck? That's kind of my issue most of the time where I'm like, I can't handle it. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I am incredibly inefficient and constantly worried and filled with self-doubt all of the time and never think anything is good enough.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I have a lot of trouble starting doing new things. And you know, like in the past 3 years, I've released 3 of these videos and I have a lot of trouble getting focused and pushing things out. And you know, they're productions, but still, like it's just I struggle with that. And it feels good to hear you say, "Oh, I have a lot going on," and it looks that way when I package it up in a pretty bow. But it's also, you know, it's a lot of wasted time. A lot of doubting whether any of this is doing anything and worthwhile and good enough. And I'm constantly filled with those thoughts. But so, you know, I'm trying to be better about treating art like a job. And I read The War of Art, which was a very helpful book for me. And just trying to sit down every day and write and create more. And for me, the most fulfilling thing is performing these poems in person versus the videos. And so trying to do more of that. And that has been a place that I'm trying to focus some more of my time. But I'm also just kind of resigning to, you know, I've been lucky in that new things and financial opportunities keep popping up for me in ways that sort of revolve within the vicinity of this stuff. And, you know, so far that hasn't stopped happening.
Right.
I'm always afraid that it will, but it seems to be on an upward trajectory and, you know, being able to sustain myself doing this work. And we'll see where it goes. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I certainly don't feel like I'm doing a lot or enough. So that feels good to hear.
And that's also reassuring for me because I think people would say the same from the outside looking at me too. And I think maybe it's the ideas that we have of the amount that we should be doing. I've been kind of like, you know, I work for myself. Why do I feel like I have to sit down and be working solidly for 10 hours a day? Like, why do I feel like that's what I have to do? You know, who's telling me that this is, you know, how many videos should you be doing? Like, what's wrong with one every 3 years, you know, like one a year for 3 years, you know? Right. And so I think it's a lot of the time it's our own shit that we're giving ourselves a hard time for.
That's true. I mean, we're the hardest critic, right?
Yeah. And the artist's way, I've read the War of Art, where I get confused with one of them, I've read that too. And The Artist's Way is a really fantastic one. Have you read that or heard of it?
I got halfway.
Did you do it? I know, I kind of stopped. It's on my bedside table and I'm like, I sometimes do the morning pages and I've stopped following along, but I'll get back to it.
It's exactly where I'm at too. I was terrible at taking myself on the artist dates too.
Me too.
It sounds fun, but like I and I'm like thinking of it. I don't know. I was having
Me too. I did a Facebook Live. So for anyone that has no idea what we're talking about, it's a book called The Artist's Way. And it's about helping to get your creativity back. And it's not just for artists, it's for anyone, because the author talks about how we're all creating things in our lives. And I love that. And so one of the exercises is morning pages every day, writing 3 A4 sheets of, you know, what's going on, just whatever's in your mind, getting it out. And then once a week, taking yourself on an artist date. And I did a Facebook Live about, guys, what should I do for my date? And then just didn't do anything. But yeah, cool.
Well, like, that might be similar in that talking about the thing sometimes alleviates our mind's responsibility of doing the thing.
Yeah, that's a thing. But it's reassuring to know that you feel the same way and with all everything that you're doing. So that's been quite helpful to me. So Max, thank you. Thank you so Absolutely. Much for your time.
Thanks for having me. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. My pleasure. Guys, I'll be back next week for more, and I'll have links to all of Max's stuff in the post description. So I will see you soon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Uplifting Content Podcast with me, Ione Butler. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review so that more people can find it. And to make sure you never miss a beat, subscribe to our weekly dose of uplifting content, which is an email from me about the best of uplifting content from that week, be it giveaways, videos, interviews, all the good stuff. And as a bonus, when you subscribe, you'll get 100 of our inspirational memes to share on your social media. The sign-up link is in the show notes. See you next time.